Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, no big Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SB Futures down 10.50. NASDAQ Futures down 53. Interesting, because I thought we were up a little last night, but now we are not. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Yes, we do. Just 1 second.
Well, we can wait a second for Kevin.
We're good now.
Did he unmute himself?
There you go, huh? How are you guys doing this morning?
All right, unmute thyself. Were you muted?
No, it was my mistake. I had to pause the music.
You just did that on purpose. You muted him.
I probably did.
And it hurt. And I felt that.
Keep your finger on the button. We actually have a...
Have you ever seen that... It's old. It's like 1960s vintage where they did the experiment where they had somebody on the other side of the... like in a different room, and they put people at the controls and said, whenever they give a wrong answer, you're supposed to push this button, and it gives them an electric shock, and it won't hurt them. So what would happen is you're supposed to increase the power every time they get one wrong, too. So you push the button, and you go, ooh, ouch! You'd hear that in the other room. And it would increase, and the person pushing the buttons would be encouraged to keep going, keep going. By the time you would get farther into the experiment, you'd have the person in the other room going, "Please stop! Ow! And keep going! Keep going!" And the psychology experiment was about the people pushing the buttons. All the other stuff was fake. The actual shocks never happened.
Oh, that's a shame.
It was very interesting, very seminal in its day, I'll dig it out and see if I can tweet it out to listeners, because I'm sure I can get YouTube on that. And it calls into question. There's some ethical questions about science and about research, about why would you do that to people? Because once they debrief the people who are giving the shocks, on the one hand they were following orders, on the other hand, they were, not feeling too good about themselves.
Wasn't that the story at Nuremberg, just following orders?
Well, yeah, I'm sure it was.
That
was the excuse for a lot of people. They were just following orders.
Yes, I have a question for you regarding... it was pretty interesting the last couple of days, Kevin. We came out on Wednesday with this horrible CPI number, right? So your 10-year and 30-year bond rates shoot up. And yesterday, the PPI came out, was bad too, but then people noticed in there that there were a couple things that were actually lower. Housing prices were a little flat or something, like three things in there. So somehow or another, if you take the two numbers together, you'd say, wow, that's a problem. And yet, the 10 and 30-year rates came back more yesterday than they were down on Wednesday, so they're actually down on the 2 days. What are we thinking here? Are we talking about a Fed going back in and start buying some stuff? Because the president is all about lower interest rates. I don't think he quite gets the part about the inflation, but I don't understand. I mean, I'm very curious. Thankfully, we weren't trading in there, but it's not exactly. I would expect it to come back maybe a little bit, because maybe the Wednesday was a little too much. But actually, to end up down on the 2 days seemed a little odd to me. Just saying.
Yeah, Tom, I don't really have a good explanation for it. You're veering out of my area of expertise or area of enough expertise to have an opinion. So I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I think the market's caught up in some level of BS here, and I don't know what I know one thing that no politician, no matter who you are, except maybe the guy in Turkey, can deal with is inflation. And if these guys don't pay attention, I was just reading something this morning about a CNN reporter is warning Trump right now that at the end of the day, it was inflation or perception of inflation and the fact that he caused it. It buried Biden's presidency. And if this guy doesn't pay attention to it, no matter how strong he thinks he is, it'll bury anybody's presidency.
Well, first of all, I don't necessarily, I think it damaged Biden's presidency, but there was so much more, including Biden's own personal situation that buried his presidency. So let's not overstate that.
It buried Carter's. It should have buried Reagan's, but it didn't because he was elected to a second term and it came around. It's a...
Yeah, didn't it start to come around before Reagan's second term?
No. In the numbers...
That's sort of how I remember it.
It already had...
You know, they were able to do the It's Morning in America ads because there had been improvement.
It had taken a long time to percolate its way through. Like I said, one of the things that mystifies me the most, Kevin, is even if we're not cheating, which I think we have been for 25 years, on the CPI, for some reason it has a natural lag to it, and I don't quite know why. I remember that vividly from the 70s and 80s. Even when people talk about this, kind of interesting, I don't want to say this on a Friday, but I will. When the buffoons on TV talk about wage push inflation, there's really probably only one time in our lifetime where that actually happened. And this is not it. Because at the end of the 70s, now when I made it to Pullman, and I don't know, was it 78 maybe, 77, the inflation had been going on for a while, really since 68, 69, 70. And most big unions, not just employee unions, I mean government employee unions, most unions had bargained a cost of living adjustment in their pay. So if the inflation was not all more 100%, it's been a long time. I don't think we had a straight deal with the Massachusetts Transportation Authority on the railroad cars we were building. If inflation was up 1% in the quarter, the contract went up 1%. It was straight. Most of the stuff with our suppliers, I say our Pullman, was straight as well. The guy with the trucks, the company right of the trucks, the lighting, the seats, those are like the big issues. Those guys all were like 1%. I'm recalling that the United Steelworkers, which were the people there, even though if you're an electrician at Pullman, you're United Steelworkers, I think they were like 0.8 or 0.75, something like that. So if the inflation was 1% in the quarter, they got a 0.8 raise. But there was a period of time there when Carter put Volcker in, and by the way, if you give a quiz to most Dutch lovers and maybe some old-line Republicans, they'll all say that Reagan appointed Volcker. He didn't, Carter did. And he jumped on the brake pedal, I think maybe a little more than he had to. And I think he was somewhat of a victim of the lag in the CPI. So for the last 6 to 8 months, where he was, pounding on the money supply, I don't think, Kevin, we had any inflation. I mean, Dr. Jay and I used to ride to work going, John, it looks to me, he'd say, yeah, it has stopped. It was dead. Yet it kept percolating through the CPI numbers, even though I think it was gone, I think. We both thought. Which meant that your staff, your union people, and maybe some other people too, were actually getting raises based on this thing working its way through. I'll use the term, they didn't deserve them. And it actually was a problem for the companies. They actually had to give people a 0.8% raise when they weren't able to raise prices anymore. But other than that, every time I've seen inflation, and certainly this time, you can see these big firms whining and doing whatever the bull bleep they're doing. And Walmart's keeping costs down. Yeah, they're trying to keep costs down as much as they can, but they're going to raise it at least as much as it's coming to them. They have absolutely that pricing power. Maybe not as much as Home Depot and a couple other places, but they sure as hell have it.
And they do, but a whole lot of businesses do not.
Right,
course.
Exactly. Right. Take ours, for instance. It's not like every time the inflation goes up, we can't...
I was talking to a restaurant owner last night, And you know, she can't pass everything on. Chinese restaurant. You know, how are you going to take your prices for Kung Pao chicken?
Well, but that's if you're in the burbs or someplace, that's a competitive industry. If you're, you know, someplace next to downtown,
and if you're in the north suburbs of Chicago, they can probably get $20 for that.
Yeah, but now
in most places, you're talking about, you know, it's a $12 meal, and it's going to have to be a $12 meal, no matter, you know, and that's an increase. So
yeah, but if you're in an area where everybody's paying its business dinners by credit card, you probably can roll with it, right? But there, your problem is really more your lease and all the other stuff than it is the food itself. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying it that's probably
it is in part the lease, and especially the lease from the utility side, because you know, it's the net that they can't control. You know you have a lease for whatever the lease price is, but it's the supplies that's where they just get crushed is supplies, and there's lots of businesses that are fitting in that mold too.
Well, absolutely. Hey, you know, there's a question here. I know you teach classes, and where's Russell when we need him on valuations and so forth?
I don't do valuations. No, I'm not an economics professor.
I thought you did some business stuff.
I am a business professor. I'm a management professor.
Okay, well, part of management is
quality. I am a quality management professor and an IT professor, but I am not an economics professor.
Well, if you're going to do business management, you better figure out how much you're going to pay for something, because you pay too much.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I give them a little bit of an accounting hit, but that, you know. But then, you know, remember, I'm teaching intro level.
Okay, well, here, and it kind of brings together all we've talked about, and Ricky, why don't you send this? It's an article on CNBC this morning by Michael Ozanian, who actually writes some really good articles. Through the years, Kevin, we've spoken from this guy's stuff a bunch of times.
Real quick, where was it again?
It's on CNBC.
CNBC, gotcha.
It's by Michael Ozanian, and the title of it is, what's the official, well, they're somebody's estimate of the valuations of all the NBA teams. And, we'll quiz Kevin. You got that buzzer? If he's wrong, we can zap him. What's the highest? I would never have guessed this. What's the highest valued team? Actually, kind of by far.
In baseball?
No, this is NBA.
Oh, NBA? The highest value NBA team? Oh, let me think about that a second. Probably the Lakers.
Zap him. Bzz, bzz. Just saying.
All right, so who is it?
Golden State. By far.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let me see. I'll read the summary of this, why the guy says it is. It may not be surprising the values of the Warriors has increased 24% compound annual growth rate since Joe Lacob and Peter Guber, I don't think I've ever heard those names, paid $450 million for the team in 2010. After all, the Warriors have won four NBA titles over the past decade, moving to their state-of-art arena in 2019. They have led by two-time MVP Steph Curry, but they also...
Do they own the arena?
Yeah, evidently they own the arena, and so they get all the other stuff, too, which is kind of different...
So apples-to-apples comparison would be with other teams that own arenas.
Right. But here's the thing that ties in with what I was talking about with, you know, the presidency and just governance in general and inflation and people's, shall we say, fiscal health. They think right now that, by the way, you're pretty close on the Lakers. Golden State, New York, Knicks, Lakers, then the Bulls.
I thought about saying the Knicks, but I went with Lakers.
Well, then the Bulls, then the Rockets, then the Brooklyn Nets. But it's interesting, Kevin. I got Golden State at $9.4 billion. Then there's the Knicks and Lakers at $7.5 and $7. Then there's probably eight teams here in the $5 billion range. Bulls 5.8, Houston Rockets 5.7, Nets 5.6, Celtics 5.5, the Clippers 5.4, Miami Heat 5.1, Dallas Mavericks 5. Everybody's kind of bunched. And then you get down to like Memphis Grizzlies in the threes. But here's the part that really kind of nails me. Is this pie in the sky crap? The New York Knicks, they got them at $7.5 billion. Their earnings last year were $178 million. Who in the hell would pay $7.5 billion for something that makes $178 billion. The new contract with the new TV revenue, which may be pie in the sky if we go into some kind of recession. If we don't, it might be fine. Or it might be different kind of dollars if we keep pumping dollars in. That if you could put something in the bank and make $370 million a year, why the hell do you want to own a team to make $178?
I'll ask the same question. Do the Knicks own Madison Square Garden?
I don't know if they do. I don't think they do. It's on top of the train station. I don't know.
Because let's just...
They don't know. They can't own the property. It's got to be on air rights.
It could be, but... We can go back to Golden State on that. We can go back to any team on that. If you own the property, what the team makes is only a small part of what you earn. So because you can monetize the, you've got a modern arena. How many days a year, especially an arena indoors? If you own your stadium outdoors and you're in a cold weather area, you're not going to do anything else with it all winter long. But if you own an arena, you're doing rock shows, you're doing all kinds of entertainment of various kinds.
Okay,
you can make a lot of money with that.
All right, but think of what you're saying though. If you separate out the team, okay, and you're saying the Golden State Warriors are a separate piece of the balance sheet than the arena, and Golden State actually pays a rent to the place, even though it's the same company, like a branch company. However you set the thing up, what do you think the other people in the arena is going to make more than $155 million? Even if you double it, it's a bad deal. On the surface of it. Now,
it might be, but I'd have to, I'd really, now, but that's the question I start asking.
Yeah, what I'm saying, but are they tied together?
What's the revenue stream that's uncoupled from the team's earnings?
Well, I guess... But the question you're asking, I think, and the answer that I would like to be able to provide, but I can't, is the building part of the Golden State Warriors itself? And I'm guessing the answer is no.
Well, if you were going to sell the team, would the building be part of the deal?
That's another question.
You're valuing them, it seems to be an important question.
I would say you're right, but I don't know how you find that out. But like here, the Chicago Bulls. You got $5.8 billion, $118 million. Reinsdorf doesn't own United Center, does he?
I don't know who owns the United Center.
I'm gonna say
it's not the city of Chicago.
No, it's a group of people that own it. Does that mean?
Yeah, Reinsdorf does limited partnerships.
So I mean, all of a sudden, does that mean the Hawks are out if the Bulls go somewhere? Who owns a bigger piece of it, the Hawks or the Bulls? I would guess.
Is it Wirtz family, Reinsdorf's family in a joint venture?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
How would you sell that?
So you're right. If you have that together, it's together. But if it's not, we don't know. I would guess the Dallas Cowboys and the stadium are the same, but I don't know that either. That if you bought the Cowboys for $5 billion or $6 billion, Would you then have to pay rent to what's his name?
Yeah, to
Bruce Stadium.
To Jerry Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
Yeah, or would that be part of the sale of the team?
Yeah, that's the question.
So when they talk about valuation, and of course, if you have different assets, especially when easier when they're separate corporate entities, then you can always sell off pieces of it.
It seems like in baseball.
So I've got questions about what's in the valuation.
Well, I mean, but if you look at the numbers at all, I mean, like the Boston Celtics, they got them making $17 million last year and worth $5.5 billion. Their revenue is $452 million. So no matter what, they're 10 to 12 times revenue, which is a lot, Kevin. It's a lot. That's a big valuation.
Additional questions. Is licensing separate, or is it in those numbers?
I think it's all part of it.
Licensed merchandise, is that in there?
I think they're talking total revenue.
Don't necessarily agree that they are. They very well may be, Tom. I'm asking the question. But I've seen it in college sports. Looking at them, they push a whole bunch of crap off book.
Well, they're cheaters. I mean, I'm gonna say the biggest driver here, Kevin, is that there's a new TV contract that's worth 160% more than the current deal. So the earnings going forward are going to be 60% higher with the new TV deal. So that's got to be a kicker in there somewhere, right? I would guess that's probably more of a deal than the licensing stuff, because I think they all share that.
Well, there's TV, and then there's local TV, local radio for in most sports. You know, NFL is different from that, but they get local radio, but they don't get local TV.
Let's say in baseball, have you known a deal where the stadium didn't go with the team? It's like in baseball, they're always kind of attached at the hip.
Well, I don't think many more baseball stadiums seem to be municipally owned.
Name one? Well, the Sox, I guess. Oh, yeah, well, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs own their park, but
the Rangers just built that new one. They own it, right?
I don't know what the Rangers do. I know Milwaukee is a municipal.
Okay, and you're right. There are some that are both. Now, they're bitching at those guys. They want zillions of dollars rehab of the place, right?
In Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Milwaukee's financing was interesting because they went to the state for money, and the state said no. So they did it. They did it with local counties, you know, the surrounding counties, including Kenosha County, which reaches all the way down to Illinois. And then part of their deal was that they have a whole series of nights when people who live in those counties get their tickets really cheap.
What we talk about bias in, you know, politics, which being unfortunately we're talking about that these days. And, you know, obviously, whatever side you're on, the press is always biased against you. You know, it's the self-flagellation syndrome or something. But one thing I would say, Kevin, is a sports follower and somebody who loved playing sports, I would say for my entire lifetime, the press has been incredibly, shall we say, generous to the whatever teams there are in town, whatever their teams happen to be. Is that because I would say when I was younger, I read some thing where it said, no matter who you are, a real guy, whatever the hell that means, a real guy generally reads the sports section first, then maybe the comics, then the finances. You know, is it so important to the newspaper to have the sports page that you literally can't tell the truth? I mean, I
think that's true in many markets. So you will hear about, you know, the New York press is harder on the on the teams and harder on the ownership. Chicago's is can be really, really challenging to really critical of ownership. So it sort of depends on the market and how competitive the market is and how much the market relies on that team for content. Now, if you go to Indianapolis, if you go to Oklahoma City, it probably starts to resemble college more. Because in college towns, that's it. If you aren't covering the local college team, you're covering high school sports. That's your next tier. And so, I definitely see it with the reporters. They need their access. And if they're too challenging, if they're not nice, if they don't play ball, and a lot of coaches are really heavy-handed about this, then they don't get any access, then welcome to the world of covering high school sports, because you're useless to your publication.
Well, I'll start this off a little bit, then after break we'll maybe continue a little bit, but then we got other stuff to talk about. I'm not talking so much. I think you're free to write an article saying that the ownership, the tight end sucks or something like that.
I'm not talking about the tight end. I'm talking about, for instance, yesterday I heard somebody on the radio driving home talking, being critical of Cubs management because it was all. Actually, I think it. Probably the wrong hill to charge, but they were talking about Alex Bregman getting his deal and that the Cubs seemed happy to have been involved and being very critical about that mindset, being very critical about the budget terms that are imposed on the Cubs when they're a major market team, and nobody imposes those same budget terms on the Dodgers and the Mets. So that's critical of management. And there are cities where that won't fly. That will get you ostracized.
Well, the everybody and every fan, by the way, the fan is short for fanatic, right? Every fan is anxious to spend everybody else's money, right?
I mean,
there is a business.
I'm not arguing that. Like I said, it's not the hill where I would that I would charge on this issue, but nevertheless, it becomes in many markets, just like it is in college towns that have major universities, major sports universities, it becomes a matter of access, and you have to protect your access as much as you have to tell the truth, probably more so.
Well, the Cubs, for instance, this year, I don't pay that much attention to them, and Maddie used to be all over them, but it seems to me that stuff I've read, Kevin, they don't really have an infield. They just don't have any people. I mean, they got some people coming up from AAA. They're supposedly pretty good prospects and so forth, but they've got the shortstop, who's real good, the second baseman, who's good, and the first baseman had a good rookie year. They don't have another first baseman. I mean, they Patrick Wisdom wasn't the best, but they just let the guy go. He's not even there to. And who's the other guy? David Bode. They just let him go, and he always played halfway decent.
Well, it's because they know they can get those anytime.
Okay, but I'm saying right now they don't seem to have any depth whatsoever. They don't have anybody to play third base except this kid who they're bringing up in AAA, who's a natural second baseman. He's such a great athlete. I think he probably played third. It's probably his time to play. I get it, but there's no like veterans sitting behind him. I mean, you're right. They're probably around, but it seems like it's kind of late.
Well, they have signed at least two major league utility infielders. So, I don't know if are those guys good for playing, once or twice a week? Are those guys good for playing for 2 weeks if your guy gets hurt? I don't know, because I don't know enough about them.
Yeah.
But it's not like they have none.
Let's go to break.
They're just not big-name signings.
Let's go to break and talk about the articles that I think you'll never see. Maybe in some towns you would. SP Futures down 8, and as if you're like, when you see him, Kevin, you see him if a team threatens to leave. Then they'll say bad stuff about him. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Time. How are you? Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 8, NASDAQ Futures down 34. Dow Futures down 123. Had a few earnings last night. Some were kind of interesting. This Palo Alto was up, I think, $20 at one point. Now it's down 9. Stuff really flies around after market on these earnings. I'd sure like to see them go back to the way back in the day when you did it at 10 in the morning and you stopped trading for an hour and you did the call when everybody was here instead of the stuff after market where I think it's all over the damn place. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 312.8%, 39,149. Hang Seng up 805, but it's 3.5%. That's bizarre. Shanghai up 14.4%. So we got the Hang Seng at 22,620. A lot of stuff going on with the tariffs and, you know, whatever the administration's doing with Canada and Mexico. They almost seem like they were ready for it. I was reading some stuff yesterday where they're immediately cutting deals for timber with China and all these other places, and I don't know if that was all expected here, but who knows what's really going on. The DAX down 61.3%, FTSE down 15.2%, CAC around up 34.4%. So European stocks mixed and sort of muted. 10-year bond up one basis point today, 4.53. Like I said, Wednesday night it traded like 4.6 something. The Bund up one basis point, 2.43. Japan up one basis point, 1.37. Oil, which has been nowheresville, still at 71.70, right mired in this low 70s. It looked like it was going to break out, and then it didn't. Brent up 54 cents, 75.56. Natural gas up 9 cents, 3.72, as another cold stretch seems to be hitting. Gold, which has been on a tear, is up 10.20 again, 29.55. Silver up $1.27. Wish I had something extra in there. We just got our regular silver position. Over 34 bucks, 34.005. Copper up a penny, 4.79. Foreign exchange. U.S. dollar, the euro's back down to 104. Actually, it's up. It's up again today to 104. What is 102? The dollar's been, it's a multi-week low. British pound, 125.8. I think they got below 123. These are big moves in currencies in 8 weeks. You're talking about 1% and 2% moves. Anyway, it's hard for anybody to even understand how much money goes back and forth every day in those things. Bitcoin up 601, 96,759. Ricky, what do you got for us, Traffic, Weather, Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in Chicago. 40 degrees right now with a high of 28. Chilly is an understatement, but we're going to get a little bit of sun this morning, and then it's going to be turning cloudy and breezy. So now we got periods of snow accumulating about 2 to 4 inches, so watch out for slippery floors. Phoenix, Arizona, 55 degrees right now with a high of 71. A couple of showers this morning. Otherwise, we got some clouds yielding to some sun. So now we'll be mainly clear with a low of 48 degrees. Let's go to traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 9 minutes. Iman Enos from Lane Cook, 22 minutes. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 15 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 13 minutes. And Iman Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be 17 minutes. Lastly, sports. NBA All-Star Game 2025 starts this weekend, this Sunday, February 16th. We got Kenny's Young Stars playing against Chuck's Global Stars at 7:20 p.m., Chuck's OGs and Kansas's Rising Stars at 8:10 p.m., and we also have another game at 9 p.m., but that's to be determined what the players are going to be, what the teams are going to be. Let's go to the NHL Nations Face-Off. Yesterday, we got the USA beating Finland 6-1, and this Saturday, February 15. Tomorrow, we got Finland against Sweden at 12 p.m., and USA versus Canada at 7 p.m. Back over to you guys.
That's going
to
be kind of a bloodbath, given the politics.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tune into some of those. Those have been interesting games. I think the Canada's first game was an overtime game. It's probably pretty good hockey, and I just haven't had time to look into it.
I watched a little bit of it last night. It's great hockey. The two Tkachuk brothers, isn't that a great name for a hockey player, Tkachuk? I mean, if you're going to be a big, bruising, checking forward, you'd want the name Tkachuk, not Smith.
Would you name your kid Charles?
I don't know about that. But Tkachuk?
Tkachuk.
Oh, God, that'll be awful. Hey, you don't get real last blast on these NBA team valuations. There's a huge variation here. Now, of course, you and I probably pick apart who's valuing one and how much money they make. Golden State made 155, New York Nets 178. These are millions. But the Celtics only made 17, which is really surprising. Since the Clippers seem to have lost $114 million. How the hell do you do that? Miami Heat, 65. Phoenix Suns, 0. And then the Milwaukee Bucks, they lost $14 million. They got a really good team. How the hell do they lose money? With all this money coming from the league. Something must be going on.
I'm telling you got to see what's on book, what's off book.
Well, that's the truth.
You have to look at the accounting. What are they, what's being amortized over at what period of time? I bet you if you check cash flow that they're all positive.
Oh, they got to be. They got to be. But the articles I was talking about, Kevin, when you know, is the people are soft on these teams. I mean, I don't think what's left of Chicago media. Well, there's all kinds of radio and podcasts and every other damn
thing. Yeah, Chicago media for sports is all radio.
Well, you know, the Trib still has a pretty big sports section. I bet that's the first thing.
Oh, they've got the section, but the consumption of it is radio, and it's radio all day, every day.
Oh yeah, and but where I'm going with this is if you and I were in, God, if they put us in charge of a newspaper, I don't think we'd sell one. If they put us in charge of a paper, Kevin, I think at some point when you're talking about stadiums and all this stuff, the population, the people, deserve some sort of a history of the financing of the current stadiums and who got what where and who's paying for it and how much it's cost people. I don't think I've ever seen that in 40 years, 50 years of watching this stuff. I mean, nobody has ever written the piece of paper down and said, you know, from Tom Howe and Kevin O'Neill, from the day the new Soldier Field was built, who put up the dough, what the lease has been, how much the Bears have made, and has the thing been refinanced, and is it paid off after 20 years? Because the answer is no. I think they owe more than when they started. I mean, if anybody looked at that and read it, would any kind of even a there's no way on earth you would even think of a new stadium. Because what they want to do with the new stadium is raise so much money that it pays off the old stadium. What kind of bull bleep is that? White Sox Park, the worst team ever in the history of baseball. Does anybody, if you were, how much do we owe on that? And does anybody, how many people in Sirius Cafe tonight or in the bar downstairs have any clue that they're paying a sales tax for Comiskey, for whatever the hell it is now, rate field or guaranteed field or something? I mean, you would think that these, I mean, the Cubs, okay, you say they own the stadium? They do. Okay, they bought it and they put a lot of money into it. The area to the west of them, while schlumps like you and me might have been paying, you know, $1 million or $2 million for a piece of property to build a bar around Wrigley, that area next to them that the Cubs have used for, God, I went to my first game there, I probably was 7 with my uncle. They had that property. Didn't they have a car wash and a donut shop that they leased out, and all the players parked their cars there forever? They never owned it. That was an easement to some railroad that went defunct. Where the tracks go through the seminary north of them, or the place where all the nuns live?
And there was, of course, the Grand Defunct Railroad.
Yeah, yeah. And the Cubs somehow, they were arguing back and forth with the city how it just should have been theirs. I think they bought the whole thing, Kevin, for like $450,000 or something. And that's where that new huge Granger building is that they must get massive leases from on their property.
Well, in addition, they own all the properties on Waveland. They probably... They bought those. Now, again, we go back to if you were looking at the accounting for it, because you wanted to dive into it and try and figure it out. I am guessing that those are all separate entities.
Oh, sure.
Probably each one is its own separate corporation or limited partnership or whatever it is. And so, you know, working your way through that would be damn near, I don't want to say impossible, it would be a daunting task. And do you think there is anybody in sports media who's going to do that?
No, I mean, because I'm saying the idea,
you've got to find somebody in the financial world who wants to do it. But that would be interesting. And every once in a while, we do see some stuff, about people writing about the economic impact on a city and debunking a lot of the myths that revolve around that, that everybody always claims when they want money from the city. So there are some things, but nothing as in-depth as what you're describing. And, you know, if only there were somebody who maybe had a podcast, knew the right kinds of questions to ask, and had an able staff of young smart producers, we could probably figure that out.
Well, you know, Kevin, I actually have a notebook binder here. I know you computer guys in this age, where I have probably 7 or 8 articles when we first started the show doing just that. But every one of them is in a place where it's not the Cubs. It's not the Bears. It was one lady wrote 2 or 3 of them here. Spectacular job on eminently Salt Lake City has built stadiums like 2 or 3 times. They had a AAA stadium, and I think they built one of the basketball things or something.
Well, and they had the Olympics, too, so that was somewhere in there.
Well, they were talking about how much money they lost on the AAA stadium, how much money they lost on the basketball stadium, and none of the ancillary revenue that people said were coming came with it. Every single one of them has been a bomb. So, I mean, I have pretty good authority that the one here in Gary has been a total bomb. The soccer stadium out in Bridgeview was a total bomb. I mean, there has been, like, yet when it comes to, nobody wants to take a shot at the Bears for fear that what their sports reporters can't get in the locker room, and if they can't, you know, since everybody, the first thing you do is you pick up the paper, you read the sports section. It's almost worse than politics, in my opinion.
They're probably afraid they'll be stuffed with sawdust.
Anyway, so that's a lot of interesting stuff in there, because it kind of jives back and forth exactly with what we're always arguing about with the politics. I mean, who can tell the truth? If you can, do you get access? Who can actually go after the Federal Reserve? Was the Federal Reserve worried about the politics? Probably. I mean, what else can people do? The media is becoming less and less competitive, in my opinion. I think it's causing some issues in this country in terms of lack of knowledge for people. You never really get a whole lot of, well, not never. It's hard to get an article that just is mostly facts and not BS to me. I don't
know that that's true. You just have to know where to look.
Well,
you'll get some good content off of CNBC as an example, but I don't think that's where I'd look for it. There is a lot of independent journalism going on the Substack platform, and you know, I think what I've read just this week from Taibbi, from Schellenbarger, people like that, has been very fact based and very interesting.
Where do they get the numbers? Because the numbers are harder and harder to come by. I mean, even these companies that are not anywhere near as
well, they are. But if you have nothing to do all day but go after numbers, they exist. You just have to. It takes a lot of digging.
Where do you dig? I mean, the internet, it seems to me like, is a morass of false numbers in a lot of places.
No, you have to go to source documents. So you start hitting up the, if you want to know government numbers, you start hitting up the government sites. I mean, where do you think all of this, all of these data miners got their data? It's right there. It's all there in all the financial statements. It's there for anybody to see. They just—it's just so hard to sift through it all, and so they brought in people who have, who have the skills to do it on automated, and all of a sudden they're tracing money paths and things like that that are discoverable, but unless you have the data analytics skills and the tools to go through it on an automated basis, you're gonna spend weeks to find not much.
Well, some of it, I think, is
computers. This is the state of artificial intelligence today. It's not that it can do things humans can't do. It just can do stuff really, really fast because you have very powerful computers doing the grunt work that humans would do, and it's just doing it really fast. I'll give you an example. I wanted 10 use cases for big data analytics in supply chain management. Well, yeah, I could go through hunting down use cases, and I'd spend a couple hours getting some good ones, or I could go into ChatGPT and say, hey, give me 10 good use cases for big data analytics and supply chain management, and 20 seconds later, I have it. Now, it's still up to me to develop the topic a little bit, but how much work did that save me? I have a colleague who's saying, goes to ChatGPT and she says, I need an in-class exercise, or please suggest, always say please to ChatGPT, by the way. Please suggest three classroom exercises and then she gives it a topic, whatever is in this week's module for the class, and it comes back and gives things. And if you want to refine it, you say, I'll give you a different example. I use this for, I said, sexual harassment cases, because we were doing HR in management class this week. I said, give me sexual harassment. It gave me all these really large corporations, very famous cases. And I said, can you give me some cases for small businesses? Because these students are all in small businesses. And it came back and gave me those. So, you know, it, that that's what's being used right now to go through all this stuff. And you just have a whole bunch of, you know, old fogey reporters who don't know how to use the tools. And what I did is just the most basic. It's just a Google search on steroids. It's not, you know, it's not it's nothing special. But once you start getting into the data analytics tools, it can go start tracking, going through all of the accounting statements, all of the transactions, and start building out the pathways as things travel from one entity to the next.
All right, I have a serious question for you computer guys, and you've given me a bunch of different answers, none of which, to be honest, cuts it so far. I mean, is a big explanation. I do some research, a little bit here and there, and whenever I do, Kevin, it seems like every time I find some place that is just what I want, 6 months later, it's either gone or I got to pay to get in or do something. The example being, you were on the air. I did it with you. I did a big report, like two or three days in a row, regarding college tuition, and I found this site that was absolutely spectacular. They had every single schools you never even heard of, going back to I think it went back to 2000 at least. Every tuition, out of state, in state, room and board. You know, whatever, you name it across the board on the thing. And I'm thinking, God, there's nothing but... Well, 6 months later, it took me harder to find it, and now it's either gone or I got to pay to get into it. I think it's done by the American College Association or something. Well, now you got to become a member to get in. How the hell does Smart Intelligence or AI... I mean, I can't just go to the DePaul law site and start piling through people's law review stuff in there without being a member or doing something. How the hell does this thing get into all this stuff?
Well, that's a good question. Don't know.
I mean, I can't be paying everybody. I mean, you can. I don't think we can go into the Tribune historical site without becoming a member or something, can we? Or certain words.
If it's hackable, then you can just, you know, do hackable on steroids.
I mean, you know, Jan Flanning, I think, goes into the Newberry Library site a lot. Well, isn't he a member? I mean, I don't think I can get in there. Can you? I mean, how does this thing just blow through all this stuff, or does it?
But there are lots of lots of websites that are subscriptions, and it's also possible. Look, if you're gonna run a service, and certainly, you know, I'm just using, you know, the free version of ChatGPT, but you can go in, you know, a lot of these things. Look, it's not like the people who are going through the federal transaction logs and pulling all that together. They probably are using a paid search service, or they've managed to develop their own, which is conceivable. But whatever it is, if you're running a paid service and you're getting paid for this, then yes, you might want to negotiate access to a lot of these sites in order to have a viable product that people will pay you money to use.
But you guys, when I say you guys, people send me stuff all the time, as you can imagine, and people send it to you, and we go back and forth. But people send me Facebook stuff. I'm not a member of Facebook because I don't want to have my brother keep track of everything I do there, like the people at FINRA make you do in my business.
Yeah, you don't want to make your compliance officer. Yeah, piss off your compliance officer. Otherwise, you're not going to be invited to dinner on Sundays.
Well, that's exactly right. But I mean, it goes further than that. People send me stuff for the Washington Post. I mean, Carl or Lou, one of them always sends me stuff from the Washington Post. I don't pay for the Washington Post. As soon as I hit the thing, I can't get the article. Same thing. Los Angeles Times a pay thing now. The Tribune, they're so stupid. I'm a paid subscriber to the Tribune. Yet if somebody sends me something on another email and I open it up for my work email, I can't get into the Tribune because I pay for it on another email. I mean, it is exceptionally difficult to get through all these places, and I don't see how. I guess I'm just very curious as how the hell AI does it.
Well, and then, you know, there have been analytics tools that would never fall into the category of, you know, what we call AI nowadays. That have been around forever that go through, you know, imagine trying to go through social media posts to determine trends, to get, you know, whether it's political information like Cambridge Analytica used to pulled famously for the Trump campaign in 2016, or whether it's, you know, just anybody trying to get market trends and all of that. You know, how structured is social media posts? You know, yours versus mine versus anybody else's. There are tools that are built just to go through and to mine that data and to make sense of it, including every stupid ass grammar mistake somebody makes. You know, so we're used to working with very structured data, the kind of stuff you can put in a spreadsheet. But big data analytics is all about going through unstructured data and making sense of it.
Well, I mean, it seems like right now the news. I'll tell you what I really miss, Kevin, because this show, we talk more about, I think, foreign stuff sometimes because we have people that are really good at it. We've got, you know, Mike was in a lot of these places, and Lou obviously still is involved in a lot of the stuff, and he does business overseas. And these guys, you know, Carl does some of that, and Russell has been in China and done all those things a lot more than most people. So we have that wealth of knowledge here that we talk about. I'll tell you what, this guy in Syria, if you just read the news here, and obviously there's enough news here to keep your head stuck or full, and I don't know anything happened since the day the guy walked in there. And obviously there's a lot of stuff going on. Who's trying to make inroads with the guy? Lou talked a little bit about it yesterday. I mean, I think who is in charge of Syria, which is kind of right in the middle of this hotbed area, how this guy lands is a massive piece of world news, don't you think? I mean, I guess he's going to land where Lou thinks he is, probably in the wrong spot for us, but maybe not. I mean, I miss kind of Al Jazeera America because they actually would have stuff like that in there. And I don't know where to go for it now. I mean, I suppose I should... Kathy used to always send me stuff from the London Times. Maybe those guys are better. They don't forget about places like we do here. But here, we just forget about stuff crazily, don't we?
Well, and that's what I said. You know, something like ChatGPT, they call it artificial intelligence, but what it really is really, really fast Google search. So, whatever search engine you like to use.
Did you ever...
So from that standpoint, you know, Tom, you should try it out and say... Give me five articles, or you can zero in on it and give you five articles on the guy in charge in Syracuse.
Well, to try and get ahead of some of the news a little bit is such an incredible advantage when you're trading. Or let's put it this way: to not be behind the news, you're never going to get ahead of it. You're never going to know what Trump or Powell is going to say before he says it. Some people, that's one of my biggest bitches with the last several administrations. They don't seem to have any issue whatsoever. People front running stuff. I mean, they don't seem to care as long as it's their people. I mean, I just find that, you know, not so good. But nobody cares. But you can't be so far behind that you got to be as close as you can, because especially I fortunately don't have a real lot of people. I mean, the firm does. We have a lot of people with all kinds of stocks that we monitor for them and do stuff with them. But most, a lot of stuff I do, unless somebody specifically has stocks, we do a lot of index stuff. I mean, to be perfectly blunt, I don't want to be, if somebody says, why don't we just pick 10 really good stocks, I don't trust myself to not pick a clunker. And in the Chicago area, why would you ever have that kind of hubris that you think you can't? I mean, 20 years ago, Kevin, if you were in my spot and somebody walked in and, Mr. O'Neill, what do you think about my portfolio? And you had a bunch of Bear Stearns, GM, United Airlines, Sears, Kmart in there. Would you have said sell all these tomorrow? They're all going bankrupt because they're all worth nothing. That would have been a really tough call, wouldn't it? Because how would anybody have even thought of that? So I don't ever want to be in a position of picking some stock and all of a sudden, you know, God knows what the chairman's doing overseas or something. So I try and stick with the indexes unless somebody really has an idea for a stock, and then I'll deal to protect it. We have a lot of concentration. As a matter of fact, Kevin, boy, a lot of the new accounts we've opened lately, there's a lot of concentration issues out there. People that were, there's still companies that in their 401ks, virtually all the stuff in the 401k is that company's stock. And people, you know, big company like that, which has been a disaster, is UPS. Stock's down like $100 in the last 2 or 3 years.
Well, how many people had Enron stock in their retirement
plans? Yeah, well,
Enron employees did? You know, they not only were they out of work, they were out of funds.
You know, it was a big one on that. Was I had was at the Economic Club of Chicago, Kevin. I used to do these kinds of things. I was a member, and we'll get a list. In order to become a member, you had to be invited like a couple of times by people that were members. Then you had to be recommended by them. So I was actually recommended by Diane Swank of one person, and Jim Tyree of so Jimmy always had a table up front, you know, one of the nicest guys. I was there the night that Bear Stearns went under. He invited me, and he says, you know, Tom, it's a pretty rough day for me. And I go, why? He goes, some of my best friends work for Bear Stearns. He goes, their stock's zero. Virtually all their 401k is Bear Stearns stock. They just lost their job, and oh, by the way, they live in a neighborhood with 25 other Bear Stearns people, and the house is going to be worth shit.
Yeah.
And he goes, how's that for a bad day? And Jimmy, it doesn't sound good. But I know Robin, when our dear departed friend, when she moved to New Jersey, they lived in an area that was, for some reason, it was right. How did Western Electric, that became Lucent, how did their headquarters get in Far Hills, New Jersey? But it did.
Got me. It was supposed to be in Cicero, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, Western Electric was in Cicero.
Belonged in Cicero, damn it.
Yeah, well, she said the year they went under, that Lucent, for those that are maybe a little younger, that was the most widely held stock in the country at one point. It was one of the ones that everybody got from the, well, telephone, AT&T was surely the most owned stock by people. If you didn't, I bought my nephews when they were born, they were both 40 years old. I bought them 1,000 shares of stock of telephone and got them in the dividend reinvestment plan. Well, the dividends, they would give you a 5% discount. That's how good they were. Give you a 5% discount and the stock that they purchased. So say the dividend was $50, they'd buy fractional shares. And if the stock was trading 40, they'd buy it for you at like, you know, 38. No commission. And if you just wanted to send them a check, back in those days when there were a lot of commissions, they just buy them for you. So everybody had their account at AT&T. Well, then when the thing broke up, you know, my brother's sitting there, okay, now I got seven different. And for a while, there was an ETF that tried to keep them all together. Then finally people said, screw it, it was too hard to do. Then, of course, they all got. But anyway, Lucent was the one that everybody kept. And they went out of business. Robin said there had to be 30 for sale signs out of the 200 houses right around them. All on the same day. So Max went to school. He the year before he had 25 kids in his class. He walks in the next year and he got 15. I mean, some of this stuff, if you're in these areas, it can really be nasty. And you don't even, anyway, we kind of digress, but.
Yeah, and you know what? Carl's in, so I'm going to turn you over to Carl. I need to I need to scoot because I have to be on campus for a 9 o'clock meeting. So I will catch you over. I'll probably talk to you over the weekend. I'll catch you next week.
In the immortal words of our
Happy Valentine's Day to all the listeners. You know,
I better make a call early.
If you haven't bought the gift, get on the stick here.
As they used to say when we were in school, see you around campus.
How about it?
That's before you could call anybody or anything. Carl, you with us?
Oh, I am.
All right, so how does AI bust into all the places that I can't?
Well, so there's all sorts of archives that, you know, aren't really archived. I mean, it's actually kind of amusing in that if you take a URL that you're being blocked on and you go to a site called archive.is, and you punch that URL into there, there's a fairly decent chance that it has a copy of the article, whether you were supposed to sign in or not.
Really?
Now the reason it's there is because there are these things called web crawlers that go through sites on a regular basis and look for content index. This is how Google builds their index. When you go in and you Google something, right? Now, most of these pay-for sites allow these robotic archivers in. That there is a standard for whether or not these sites are supposed to crawl your particular area. There's a file called robots.txt, and you can.
How does anybody find out all this stuff?
Well, if you
other than asking you.
you do stuff on the internet. This is, you know, and this is part of what you're doing is putting up web pages. This is part of the stuff you're kind of sort of expected to understand how it works.
From your site, I get it, but how would somebody like me, just getting blocked all over the place, know that if I snuck to another site, I'd get in?
Well, you know, it's just one of those things you learn over time, I suppose. Guess what? You just learned it.
Yeah, well.
So the thing is that it is consensual on the part of the sites, okay, because not only is there, now there is a standard for this robot control file. The thing is, it's advisory, okay, but there's a very serious problem if somebody was to use it for purposes like, for example, training an AI, which they've been doing. And that is that you have a copyright on anything you publish, whether you put it online or not. And my understanding, and I raised a big stink about this at the conference a couple of years ago when I was invited to be part of a panel, in that everybody that was pointing these AIs at you know, all of these different sites and such, they're breaking the law, and not a little. Okay, and copyright law for registered works is not something you want to fool with, because the damages are statutory. You don't have to prove that you actually took harm, and they're very large. They're six figures per violation. So if you get tagged on that, I don't care how big a company you are, you're done. And this is something that you know, is working its way through the legal system, because you know, it's like it's when people started doing the Napster thing, there was the attempt to claim that, well, you know, Napster wasn't really doing it. It was the user that was doing it. And therefore Napster wasn't responsible. And they couldn't go after them.
it sounds like a load of crap, but yeah.
Well, that didn't work out very well. So I mean, that's the, you know, that's part of what happens, is that as time goes on, these you know, these things all develop out. But yeah, for the most part, now if you go take a look at one of my articles, and you take that and you plug it into those archive sites, you'll find that that it says it doesn't know what it is, and that's because a couple of them have gotten very nasty letters from me telling them that they were going to find themselves in court if they didn't cut it out, despite the fact that their archiver, their crawler was banned. They were doing it anyway. So, you know, now there are areas on my system that you actually have to be signed in order to access it all.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what happens to me. A lot of the stuff you don't
normally
do. Well,
but they're not. See, the thing is that they are, but they're not. They're soft limits.
Okay.
Okay, so like the Washington Post will let you read a certain number of articles,
yeah, like,
you know, without
two.
That being the case,
like two.
Well, it's, you know, but it's not zero,
right?
Okay, being the point. And so, you know, so there you are. But that's, but the, you know, I mean, this, and part of the thing about data, you know, it's like when this NDB thing came up, you know, everybody lately has been screaming about this thing with Doji having, oh, you know, they can get into this and they can get it. Well, yes, they have read only access. It's called auditing. And that's the, you know, I mean, that's what auditors do, right, is look at stuff.
But yeah, except they're not really auditors. We don't know what they are.
Well, but you know what? Actually, we do, because it was Barack Obama that created that program. And with, by the way, exactly that remit. Okay?
Well, I mean, I just...
So yes, we do, and actually with the remit to go in and have access. And by the way, this was challenged at the time that Obama created it, and it was found lawful, okay, that under executive authority, under Article 2 authority in the Constitution, he had the absolute, not only the right, he had the duty to take care that laws are faithfully executed, which includes only paying things that are legitimate payments and not paying things that are potentially fraudulent. Okay?
But we're not talking about fraudulent. We're talking about...
Well, yes, we are.
We're talking about... In your... That's not what's getting out. I mean, I don't know.
Excuse me. The GAO. Just if anyone thinks that this is all brand new stuff, that you know is now throwing or being thrown around. Last year, the GAO was supposed to actually audit everybody, right? I mean, that's their job, the Government Accountability Office. That is the job of that particular.
Well, without a doubt, yeah.
Right. Well, how well would you trust an auditor that said somewhere between $210 and $500 billion was stolen last year?
Okay.
Would you accept that kind of an opinion from an auditor?
It's probably true.
Would you accept something with that kind of a range? We don't know how much was stolen. It was somewhere between $210
and $500 billion. How many trillion dollars we're talking about?
By the way, that was one agency, and it was CMS.
I mean, I'm under the school of thought that says I'm a big fan of Harry Truman. That's what he did during a war, right? And he had the power to do it, and he did it, and people listened to him. He did his job, okay, because that was what he was supposed to do. He was a senator and all that kind of stuff. I'm all for holding these people's feet to the fire and for Congress to be all over auditing all these places. And do I think instead of 245 agencies, could we get away with 210 if we stop the duplication? You know, that's where I've been. You and I have talked for years now. You know, I'm all over this, probably more so than any right winger. The idea that you're gonna blow it up with guys that I don't trust Elon Musk to play golf with a guy. I mean, that guy has no business in this stuff. He's all over.
Well, he's not actually the one doing any of the work. He's not nearly smart enough to be able to do that.
No kidding. But it's all about. I mean, these people. Most of the differences I have with Trump, to be honest with you, are mostly style points. A lot of what the guy says make a lot of sense. We did go too far the other way. There's no question about that. But the dude is running his own businesses out of the place. You never had to accuse Harry Truman of that. I mean,
and Joe Biden wasn't.
That has nothing to do with anything.
Well, it has everything to
no,
do
it doesn't.
With everything.
No, it
if
doesn't.
If you're going to have... Well, wait a minute. Where was the objection from the other side?
I don't want Biden doing it either. I'm saying I want people...
Okay,
to...
but you know what, Chief? See, this is the problem, okay? You're not consistent about this at all.
Yes,
and
I am.
And by the way, very, very few people are. No, you're not, okay? Joe Biden should have been impeached the day before he took office for what was clearly and later was proved to not only have been corruption that occurred during the time he was vice president, okay, which is bad enough, but then on top of that, what we now know is that Reuters, among others, actually had vouchered payments made to them in the millions of dollars for the specific purpose of disinformation to be published related to what was going on.
The difference, everybody keeps accusing me about this stuff, is my upbringing was very simple. I never got away with, hey, you bleeped up. Yeah, but Joe was with me. I don't care about Joe. Well, Joe did it worse. Well, that's his parents' problem. You get in here. I mean, nothing rankles me more, honestly, than to say, this guy, I don't like what he's doing. Yeah, but what about the other guy? I don't care about the other guy. I do care about the other guy. He's probably a crook, too. But, I mean, the conversation, Joe Biden is going to be dead in 6 months or damn near. Who cares?
Yeah, well,
Hillary's gone,
already.
Too. I mean, I don't want to talk about Hillary anymore, either. I don't want to talk about Tricky Dick Nixon anymore. He's dead.
No, but you know what? But here's my point, okay, with regards to all of this. It now appears. Now, we all knew that there was a fairly substantial level of corruption within the government. All right?
We've known that for... Well, it's getting worse. I mean,
yes, but we have known that it's been there for a very long time, right? But what we haven't had is the receipts to put numbers on it.
I think they've always been there.
Of course they have.
Yeah.
But they have been deliberately suppressed.
Well, without going to the specific... Right. What seems to be different to me, and don't ask Ricky to play the Mayberry song, but there's a massive... We had Wayne on yesterday. when this all happened during the Nixon stuff, that those guys, I mean, Wayne was involved with that, he was a reporter, there was a backdrop of people that just said, you know, even Jerry Ford and Bob Dole and those kinds of guys that were, you know, military guys, I'm going to say they were real people. That sounds so stupid. But Dan Inouye, these were guys that you could point to in the Senate and the House that had, I mean, the guy who was the House Ways and Means guy, he might not have liked Dan Rostenkowski, but he was a real guy. He didn't push Danny around. Wayne was saying, you don't have this backdrop of somewhat morality or working together because all these guys were in the Army together and so forth. And a lot of people didn't come back. They had a real feel, even though things were surely not perfect. I mean, Carl, you and I know that. Nothing's ever perfect in a democracy. But there was a backdrop of when Nixon actually talked to these guys and they go, Dick, we can't go with you on this one. You covered the thing up. You got to go. Now it seems like this residual, I'll use the term, not just morality, but we're all in this together kind of morality that maybe only comes from a generation that fights together or something. God, I hope that's not the case. It's not there now. I mean, I can't point you four or five people in the Senate or the House that if Trump goes too far, and I'm not saying he has or he hasn't, if he goes too far, they're going to stand up and say, Donald, knock it off. I mean, there were guys in Nixon's term that would do that and had the balls to do it. I don't know there are now. I mean, there's a lot of reporters and people on, you know, God knows what, talk shows and everything. They can't wait to hear themselves talk. But I don't see anybody that is any sort of moral. We don't respect any of the judges. There's nobody there that can stand up and say, hey, knock it off, and people will say, well,
okay, hang on a minute. Let me focus in on one of the things what you just said, okay, because I think it's very important. And it's a huge part of the problem. Right? And that is nobody respects the judges. All right. Well, have you ever heard of Rule 65?
I probably have, but explain it to everybody.
Okay, I will. So Rule 65 says that if you come in and you ask for a TRO, a temporary restraining order, or an injunction, right, which is essentially a demand to stop doing something, right? Right now. Not after you sue and you win, but right now.
Usually they're very temporary.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay. A TRO is almost always issued ex parte. In other words, the other side didn't even get to present any evidence. You go in there, these things, and they get abused all the time in divorce court, and nobody ever gets sanctioned for doing it either, which is why they get abused. I mean, if you sanctioned a few people, then the BS would stop.
Yeah, we have enough trouble trying to find people that committed crimes, much less ones that are thinking
about
it.
Well, I'm just saying,
but
they're used strategically, okay, because you set a standard for what is now the status quo, and then now you're asking a judge to change that.
Actually, by the way, when you say that, my buddy Bill, who I meet with every week, and he's an attorney that actually does all the criminal cases, not all, but a lot of criminal cases, he says the restraining orders now come with a bracelet. That if they say a couple thousand yards from your wife, a couple thousand yards from your ex-wife, and if you come in there 2 yards, they know about it.
Well, yes, it's the same thing that they release people with, you know, GPS ankle bracelets, same deal, right?
But I had no idea they did it for restraining orders, but they do.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Now, you want to talk about something that if abused is, I mean, people will go to jail for it.
Well, Bill Spiegel, you'll love this, Carl. Bill goes, yeah, if Beth ever got a restraining order against me for 2,000 yards, we'd have to find a new bar. We're too close. That would be bad. Yeah. No, that'd be bad. Yeah. That'd be bad, wouldn't it? We'd have to find a new bar.
So here's the point I'm making. Rule 65 is the set of procedures at the federal level. Now, state courts, there's a lot of squirrely stuff. But when I was running my company, every now and then we had occasion to think about whether or not we wanted to go after somebody, right? I mean, you know, it happens with any company. And, you know, so you talk to counsel and you're kind of thinking about, you know, okay, you know, what do we really think we have here? Should we be thinking about this? And then it probably helped a lot that one of the people that I had on retainer was also a personal friend of mine and a very high power firm in Chicago. Okay. So, you know, These guys are very good people. And we used to play golf all the time, so we'd, you know, we'd chat about the, you know, just the general context of the legal system in the civil cases and the business related stuff, because of course, you know, that's what it was about. It was all business. Rule 65 says that if you go into federal court and you want a TRO or an injunction, there's a set of procedures that have to be followed by the court. All right? One of them is, in order for a TRO or an injunction to issue, the person who is bringing the movement, the motion to do it, must post security sufficient to compensate the enjoined party if they lose. So if you come into the, now this is never, and the only entity exempt from this, it's not discretionary, the only entity exempt from this is the federal government. So if the federal government comes in and wants to bring a TRO or an injunction, they do not have to post a security bond. They don't have to post certainty for that. But everybody else does, including states. Now, you just had these guys judge shopped in New York. They filed on an emergency basis after the close of business. They knew who the emergency judge was who was going to hear that, because the federal courts, just like every other court, I mean, you know, if you get arrested, you have so many hours before you have to be arraigned, right? So there is an emergency judge that is available. He doesn't like it when he gets woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No.
but there is one that is available after hours in all of the different courts. They knew exactly who that was. They waited until after the close of business on Friday to file this thing. 60-page complaint with 40 pages of supposed backup. And in less than 12 hours, they get a TRO. All right. Over the weekend, with no capacity to be heard on the other side. Now, here's the thing. This judge issues a national injunction. And what he enjoins the federal government from doing is stopping payments that Doji has identified as potentially fraudulent. Okay, suspending them.
Well, there's a big.
Now wait a minute, Chief. It may take a year or two for this case to ultimately work its way through the system and end up wherever it ends up, whether it's at the trial courts, whether it goes to, you know, to appeals, the Supreme Court, whatever have you, doesn't matter. Right? There, once you file this thing, there's a process. Okay. In order for those states to file that complaint and to get a TRO, they should have had to post a bond for every penny that potentially could have been fraudulently paid.
A million wrongs don't make a right. I know that, but
Chief, that you're
glossing over the main part of the problem. The main part.
No,
of the
I'm not. I'm saying that. Look, this is the way that that both sides of the aisle have played this game for.
Okay, I don't. I actually don't. The process ought to be, and you just
these injunctions
it.
Are not valid.
They're not valid. Neither is somebody telling the people not to spend the money that was apportioned for it either.
Well, wait a minute. Only if it was as apportioned.
According to who?
Okay. Look, if I said, do you believe that Congress? Appropriate. And by the way, if you think you do, then you know, go find
the
it. For me.
The procedure is, and this is the part I
no, will, no. Did Congress appropriate money to deliberately lie to the American public about COVID?
Deliberately lie.
Yes. Engage in propaganda.
Okay. The
false information.
So you going to throw Trump in jail too? He was all over it.
Look. Reuters has they found a voucher to Reuters with that specific disclosure in the memo.
Yeah, I mean,
did Congress appropriate the funds
who spent the money in Illinois to send a letter out to all the doctors saying, if you say anything bad about our COVID policy, we're going to take your license. I mean, let's leave the COVID thing. My point is I think that
Chief, they're all part of the same thing.
But the accounting office, I think I'm very aware that that money goes where it's not supposed to go. That's why you're supposed to have an audit function.
Okay, so guess what? If I stop that payment, that's not a violation of the law.
Okay, all right. No. Here's where I'm going with this. First of all, I think if we sat with our guys in 17, whatever year it was, they put the Constitution together, when you make the judges essentially a lifetime thing, the thought that every single person, now we are so split right or left, a judge just can't be a judge. Oh, he's a Obama appointee. Immediately, people on your side of the aisle, the guy's a moron, he's a liberal, he's a progressive, he's probably gay. I can't do that. I just can't do that. Or the other side. You know, he's by the way, the McDonald's case that people put up over the lady burned.
Oh, yeah.
That guy was a Reagan appointee. He was appalled by how many cases McDonald's have had and it ignored. And yet the people on the right are absolutely convinced this guy had to be some liberal, which he wasn't. And by the way, McDonald's wasn't guilty, which they were.
Okay, hold on a minute. See, this is exactly what you just brought up is what's not supposed to happen.
Right.
All right. It, on both sides.
Right.
The point being, the rules of civil procedure are not suggestions. If I tried to go into federal court and get a TRO or an injunction against somebody when I was running my company, I had to, in order to get that, post that security. And it had to be a reasonable computation of the harm that the enjoined party would take if
how
I
is
got
somebody
it
gonna
and
get
then ultimately
a,
lose.
We get some kind of a security deposit against what from what I gather, and again, you're probably closer to this than me, you just described that there is an audit arm to the government. And if you go into some place and it looks like they're shelling money out there, something that really wasn't in there, that's a problem. Then I think those people, whatever committee or something that thing came out of, there needs to be a report, chop chop, back to these people saying, hey, you give us that money back because that's not where we want it to go. There's a procedure here. It's not Elon sends in people, we don't know what their name is, and they don't get to stop payment.
They didn't stop payment. There wasn't a single instance of that. Not a single instance of that has happened.
You're sure?
Yes.
All I've read this week is they demanded they stop this, they took this money back, they fired this guy, they fired that guy. First of all, here's my problem. This leanings from the right. What I don't want to have happen is it could be your kid, could be my kid if I had one. They went to Washington, somehow got a job, we're congratulating them, they're working for some place. Tomorrow they're vilified. They're just a government employee. Screw them. Kick them out. We don't care about their lease. We're sure they went to work and did nothing, because that's what people are telling us. But this whole group, we get rid of 100,000 people and nobody knows the difference. Well, you and I know that if we, because of the combination of efforts, we probably could have less people there if we got rid of some of the duplication. What did Wayne say yesterday? There's 18 agencies that do spying.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was like 4 or 5. When he said 18, I go, you got to be kidding me. Because now there's 18 of them. NSA, yeah. Army intelligence, naval intelligence. Well, I think, Carl, that some of the people on the show, if you give us 4 months to put it together with some people from Congress, I think we could cut the 18 down to 16. I'll just pick a number.
Okay, all right, Chief.
But that doesn't mean everybody who works there is an asshole. But it doesn't.
Well, hold on a minute. We're not talking about whether or not somebody's an asshole. What we're talking about is whether or not money is being spent in ways that Congress did not direct.
But it's
now,
also
if the people. Now look, if the people of the country decide to vote for their representatives and they put in place their representatives vote for appropriations, because that's and it begins in the House. This is if that's the Constitution. It says that's what happens. The House votes out an appropriations bill, the Senate concurs, the President signs it. Okay. That set of appropriations and the purposes for which they're appropriated, which are set forth in the actual bill, are law. And that is where the money goes.
Without a doubt.
If we vote ourselves a, by the way, from the PPI report, If you think that the last CPI number that just came out was bad, there is a 20% annualized inflation spike in the Python that is going to come crapping out the other end.
See, now you are in total disagreement with the morons yesterday that said there's all these little spots in the PPI that were so good that the actual 10-year rate is lower now than before the CPI came out.
Yeah, well, you know what? There's also a bunch of people that seem to think that there really is de minimis fraud, waste, and abuse within the government, and getting rid of any of it is never going to happen. This credit emission is going to keep... But, by the way, and therefore, all this credit emission is going to continue to happen. The markets will levitate.
You have no bigger agreeer in this world and in stuff than me. I don't like the ancillary parts that every employee up there must be some liberal Democrat and they don't do anything to get them the hell out of there. The overtones to this, I'm reading in all these different articles, to me, I think are really horrible. I mean, like, I don't... Most people go to work and do something. I mean, is it... And I... This Office of Consumer Protection stuff, when that thing first came out, Carl, I don't know if you were on the show, I said, this sounds like a duplicative place to me.
Yet
everybody else, and I didn't really realize how much I think I was right on this until I listened to Powell the other day. And they said, well, this group, because it's paid for out of the Fed, which is screwed
that's
up.
That's correct, which is generated up. A challenge, and it was ultimately found constitutional.
Well, which to me is kind of messed up. I don't know if that's a real term, a legal term. But they basically said, now, the day Elizabeth Warren, I'm no fan of, pushed this thing through, I said, on the air, if we could find it, not that it makes any difference if it's on the air, guys, we already got the comptroller currency, we got the FDIC, and oh, by the way, we got the Fed, they're supposed to be riding herd on these people. What do we need another agency for? But now, they asked Powell yesterday, is there any overlap if these guys leave and are just gone tomorrow, which it appears they're going to be, do you pick up any of that slack? And he's, oh, no, there's no overlap whatsoever. And what somebody else asked him, well, so in other words, the complaint, a consumer complaint against a big bank that would have landed there can't come to you guys. Now, we have nothing to do with it. So, okay, were there too many people there? Was it maybe a bad idea to begin with? Doesn't appear that anybody... So what are they going to do with the big pile of complaints? Dump them in the Potomac like they didn't happen?
Well, what did they do with them before that bureau existed? Are you telling me nobody took them?
Evidently nobody. Nobody.
Well, actually, no, that's not true.
Well, okay, might have gone to the state. Might have gone somewhere. This is where I'm always jousting with Hal about. I mean, Hal's theories are my theories. Maybe more so than he thinks. But yet, once you start letting some people slide and other people slide, we've got a law. You just mentioned a law. Okay, Rule 65. Well, what the hell's the name of the thing? I've got it here somewhere. Somebody law that when they allowed interstate banking, they put limits on how much deposits banks can have,
right,
which is 10% nationally and 30% in a state. Yet,
right.
What Citigroup, or not Citigroup, Chase...
And then
what?
You start buying
they're
each
like other's
banks.
They're like double it.
Well, because they start buying each other's banks.
Yeah. So
and by the way, under 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1, which has been around for more than 100 years, that was not supposed to be allowed to happen.
Right, but nobody's going to... But so now you can't...
Well, now wait a minute, Chief. See, here's the thing. This is my entire point, okay? And it has been since this, all this crap started. I've been yelling about it for 30 years. We all know that there has been, that there is fraud, waste, and abuse within the government. Okay, we all know it happens.
But it's also such
but
a
it, but it happens at
I know,
it
but
happens
the minuscule. You know how much the entire this consumer protection group with all the people they have there. You know what percentage they are of the budget?
Yeah, very little.
0.00001.
Yeah, basically nothing.
Yeah,
right. So here's the problem with all of this. Okay, that I have with all of this. When you get down to it, everyone, Elizabeth Warren points at this. This is always so terrible. Everybody's going to get screwed because this bureau is being dismantled. Okay, well, she may be right and she may be wrong about that. But let's take her complaint as true. Okay, let's take her complaint as true. without evidence, because she doesn't have any, but let's take it as true.
Well, they've had several big settlements with major banks.
I understand that. Yeah. But okay, listen, you and I have talked about this a bunch of times.
Yep.
Unless you claw back every penny plus the percentage of the risk of getting
without
caught.
Without a doubt. Did they do enough? No.
They did nothing
yeah.
in terms of deterring behavior. Okay, Wells Fargo, if you remember, during the time of the crash and forward, actually put in place compensation programs for their employees at the branches that essentially incentivized them to commit fraud against their customers
right.
by opening accounts that they never asked for. Okay, and they paid bonuses to the employees on the basis of the number of accounts that they generated. They did no auditing whatsoever to ensure that you actually signed up for the account that you allegedly did.
All right, let's.
Okay,
I don't want to go too far down this road, but my question why did they get busted for this? I guess my question is, what we had a when PTI started, like 1990, 1991, we went over to Harris Bank and everybody moved their accounts over there because we were all just, you know, payroll came from them and a whole bit. And they gave everybody no fees and everything because we were all tied together.
Right.
And, you know, I guess when this thing happened, and I don't want to get off on this one too much because it was kind of years ago, but when this thing happened, they signed me up for a checking account and a savings account. I never used the savings account, but it didn't bother me that it was there. I think what happened is the people on the board or somebody were so dumb that one day they must have decided that if you're not using the account, to charge you like a monthly minimum or something. Because if it was just there and they never charged you, who cares if you had an extra account?
Well, unless it's a credit account, in which case it hits your score.
What I'm saying, if I signed up for I walk in, I go, Joe, I need a checking account. Okay, fine. Well, here, Tom, well, how about we throw a savings account there too, and if you ever want to use it, you use it. As long as there's no minimum, what's the difference?
Well, none, provided that there isn't a liability that comes back at you.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think what happened is I'm not positive, is all of a sudden one day they decided to charge a minimum on all these moribund accounts, and all these people got bills, and they went, what the hell is this?
Well, there was that, and also they opened up accounts that had credit implications as well, which damaged people's scores. Okay, now that's, I mean,
well, that's
good
a problem.
God.
Yeah.
Well, that shows up in everything. I mean, that shows
well, yeah,
up
but it was a I mean, they didn't open me up a credit card or anything. It just was a savings account of everyone.
Oh, no. I'm talking about these people. This was, in fact, that kind of a situation. Okay. But here's the thing. You know, so you say, well, you know, we have this so-called enforcer. Was there any actual deterrent? Did anybody go to jail?
You can say that about anywhere when it talks to big business.
I understand this. But here is my entire point on this, okay? It appears from the data that we now we've all known that there's been fraud, waste, and abuse, but we haven't been able to put a number on it until now. Now we have a number. And just as...
Now, if that number... Don't take this back. If that number came from a liberal, you wouldn't believe it.
Yes, I would.
We have people on the show that wouldn't. There are a lot of people out there that wouldn't.
You might have people out there that wouldn't, but I don't care where it comes from. As long as you have receipts, I'm going to look at it, and if the receipts appear to be valid.
Can I ask you slightly same subject type
okay,
of thing?
Okay, let me
finish it.
Let me tell you where the receipts, because I said, you know, you got to have receipts, right? Because everybody in politics makes claims that are complete crap. They have no backing at all for it.
Isn't that the beauty of it? Isn't that the beauty of it? Just say what you ever want to say.
Well, but now we appear to have some receipts. And one of the sets of receipts that we have with regards to this in particular is over $2 trillion of CMS funds that have been vouchered through the system and cleared to people who do not have a valid Social Security number. Now, that is per se fraud. Because you cannot collect.
I'm. When you say that, is money coming in or money going out?
Going out. Being paid to people.
All right. So, I've known for a while, and I'm sure you have too, and a lot of listeners maybe have, that a lot of the undocumented aliens that people, you know, do nothing but rag on, I'm talking, you know, 30, 40 years ago. There were all kinds of Social Security cards that people got jobs in restaurants and other places. And a lot of them actually had the number 000 all the way across the bottom. So,
which, by the way, is invalid.
Right. But from what I understand, I don't know why I threw it out, Carl, but if you walked into whatever, I'm sure they didn't do it, Sirius Cafe, and you showed Billy your Social Security card, and they send a check to the government, and it's a fake card. Matter of fact, Billy did tell me years ago, because other restaurants were not as straight as the Sirius, where he goes, the money never came back.
Oh, no. Well, it's even worse than that.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I guess, let me finish I'm talking too much here, but I always thought the fraud was that way, that these poor people are never going to get a Social Security check because there's no...
Now hold on a minute. Now, you're not supposed to benefit from committing fraud, and if you're here illegally...
You're missing the point. What I'm saying is these people, they had a fake number. But
I understand.
The restaurant sent them the government money for 10 years, and yet there's no claim the guy ever could. He never got a Social Security check, but the government got the dough. They were the ones committing the fraud, not the guy.
No, they were. Okay. So you believe that somebody who does an illegal thing and profits from it should be able to then collect the funds?
I never said he... The point is, he's paying into what is supposed to be an insurance thing.
But he's not paying into it because he has no legal right to be here and he can't be a part of the system.
Okay, but... He's
having it confiscated from him.
You would think that somebody would call up the place and say, what are you doing? We don't have this number.
Well,
who is this guy?
Not only that, if you think that's bad, it's actually much worse in that if somebody uses my Social Security number while they're working at the diner, okay... not only will the government take money, they won't tell me that somebody's using the number.
And they won't. They should. They should up your dollar amount, right?
No. They know it. They know it's separate. They segregate the. They segregate it out. It doesn't count.
See, that's unconscionable to me.
I am not arguing the other side of this. What I'm saying is that what has been now identified. I mean, we're not talking about duplicates here. We're not talking about where somebody's using a fraudulent number, okay? Or, as has been alleged, now I don't have receipts for this yet, that there were actually 10,000 voter registrations under the same Social Security number processed in Arizona.
Do you have to give your Social Security number when you get a voter?
In many states, you are asked for it, yes.
All right, so how exactly, now that you got me going down
the road. So now that's kind of interesting.
But
because,
I mean, when I know people, I mean, long before I was eligible for any of this stuff, when I was like 59, they'd send me stuff saying, here's the stuff you've paid all the time. If you want to do it when you're 62, how does somebody make a claim that never paid them a nickel?
Well, the way you do it is you literally have a system that has no controls and allows vouchers to be processed that are demonstrably, if anybody that looked at it, that's instantly fraudulent.
But I mean, they know. I'm saying, I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. Okay,
but they found the voucher.
But I'm saying they're already. If you make it to 65, they're sending you crap when you're 58 or 59. This is what. You're in the system. They're saying this is what if you want
to
retire.
Well, Chief, you used to every year. Now they don't do it anymore. Now it's electronic. You have to sign in. Okay, but you used to get in the mail from the Social Security Administration here's what we recorded for last year. You used to get that every year. Okay, from them because they send it to the same place that whatever address you filed your taxes from. All right. Now it's electronic. You have to, you have to set up an account and look at it. But they send me an email now every year saying, we have your new statement. Go in and look at it. But it used to actually be a piece of mail that you got.
But how does something fly in the day before you're 65? Something flies in there and they never heard of you before, and all of a sudden they start sending you a check. How do they do that,
Chief? Because there are no internal controls in the system to stop it. And it's deliberate.
I find
it goes back 40 years, okay, or more. All right. This is what it, but this is what has been uncovered. Now, let's take this sort of percentage and extrapolate it forward. You tell me what the American public should do if it turns out, and it may, that essentially all of the national debt accumulation over the last 20 years has been a result of fraudulent payments, and therefore all the inflation. All the inflation that has occurred in your cost of living has been stolen. It wasn't a product of decisions that the American public made in electing representatives and policies that were enacted and put into place. None of that. That was not the reason for the inflation. The reason for the inflation is that the money was literally stolen.
People are making $1,500 a month. How does that make it's a lot of those make $1 trillion.
Chief, they've found...
Who's they?
This is just this preliminary scrape that has been done through with the people that have gone in there into the Treasury system.
Would you
on a read-only basis?
Would you play golf with Elon Musk? Would you believe a word the guy says?
Would I play golf with him? Yeah, because I can see him strike the ball.
I don't know. You'd have to be like Oddjob and James Bond, or Goldfinger and James Bond. It would look like that kind of a match.
Well, would I expect him to kick the ball in the rough? Yeah, I would.
Okay. I'm saying I don't know this.
but
these numbers seem kind of... Hey, I have a somewhat of a same sort of question for you regarding... I was talking to Kevin about how people... They must think that the sports section of the paper is so important that they can ever tell the truth about how much the teams in these cities are actually getting from the city. I mean, you would think there would be... Now, my question, the Federal Reserve, after the CPI number came out the other day, and let's talk a little about that, actually, but and all of a sudden I hear, I'm on the way home, I'm listening, and then I kick up CNBC later, and they're talking about how, when these rates go down, when the Fed lowers rates, how it's so beneficial, your credit card rate goes down, this goes down. What planet are they coming from, Carol? The credit card rates have never gone down. They're higher than they've ever been. The spread between prime rate and what people are paying is it's never been this high. Why does somebody still dumb enough to think that if they lower rates a quarter, that somehow or another your 22% credit or 25% credit card next month is going to be 24.75? What world are they in?
The same one where the federal government handed out several tens of millions of dollars to Reuters to lie to the American public about everything relating to what the government was doing, probably including economic figures.
Oh, I there was an awful lot. Like I said, there was so much misinformation on that, and I mean,
well, but I mean, this is part of the problem. Okay, is that and oh, by the way, it was Obama that got included in the NDAA. The prohibition that used to exist on domestic propaganda.
There were people, Carl.
But now I'm not saying it was that Obama did it by executive order, because he didn't. He actually got Congress to pass it. Okay, so you can look at the 535 clown faces that sit on Capitol Hill for the responsibility.
What do you make of the my favorite one was the airlines, that when they wanted people to be able to get on the airlines, right?
Yeah,
they went to Harvard. And Harvard says, and I know a little bit about ventilation, not so much on an airline, but on railroad cars. Yeah. And I know how much outside air they use and how much they don't, or at least I used to.
Right.
And they came out and they said, sitting in an airplane next to somebody like a foot and a half away, because of the incredible system they have in there of recirculating air, was safer than walking down a street with somebody on the other side. Should we take Harvard out and spank them? How could anybody say something that stupid? And yet, the airlines paid for it, and Harvard put their name on it.
Chief, this is the... I mean, okay. So, RFK just got confirmed, right?
Yeah, that's interesting.
He just got the final vote, and he's all right. And a lot of people have been all over him about his standpoint with regards to vaccines in general, not just the COVID shots, but all of them.
Well, they've changed the definition of a vaccine. I don't think a COVID shot is a vaccine, but that would be me.
Well, guess what? Most of the things that they give people these days are not by the definition of vaccine, a vaccine. Okay, they are not. However, one of the points that RFK has repeatedly made over the years, and he is absolutely accurate, is that of the current shots that are given to people, essentially zero of them have ever undergone a placebo-controlled trial. Zero. And by the way, many of them have had their formulations changed from when they were originally developed and trials were originally done. So, for example, the polio shot, which essentially everybody gets these days.
You still get those?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, well, some
they
of stuff.
Give it to kids.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay.
But here's the thing.
I thought they didn't do that for a while because it was eradicated.
Well, now wait a minute. Well, that would be the question. Of course, well, it's eradicated here in the United States and some other parts of the world, not so much. By the way, most of the polio cases now are actually caused by the oral vaccine that is used in other countries because in about 1 in a million doses, it reverts to active polio and gets you.
Really?
Ugh. Well, that's the reason that we used both in the United States. But that's why we use both in the U.S.
Stupid question. If you get smallpox,
yes.
Somehow if you got it, then you got the vaccine within like 2 or 3 days, the vaccine still works. In polio, it does not. Once you get it, you're screwed.
No, well, once you get, you mean if you're exposed and you take it? Yeah, no. If you're exposed prior to getting the shot, that's tough.
Okay, with smallpox, they still got a few days to hit you with the stuff.
Well, okay, so there's an awful lot of BS that flies around about like post exposure, taking a shot post exposure. 99.9% of the time, that is completely worthless. Yet they'll try to push it on you anyway.
Okay.
Right. Same thing with tetanus, by the way, which is a serious problem. And where they do understand the difference is rabies, because rabies is universally fatal. All right. So there is it's called an immunoglobulin, which is not the same thing as a vaccine. That if you get bit by a rabid animal, that they'll give you instead. That actually works, but it does not produce permanent immunity. And
it's a cure. It's not a vaccine.
Well, it's a
something.
Prophylaxis.
Yeah.
It's a prophylaxis, but it is different than the vaccine. Now, problem with all of these current shots is that none of them have actually been placebo-controlled tested. And more importantly...
But nobody wants to do that because somebody's going to get it.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So how do you say that something is safe if you've never done the tests? Secondly, and the other problem that's very serious is that in virtually every case, a dose makes the poison. Okay. So I mean, if I have a drink of alcohol, I enjoy that. If I have an entire bottle of alcohol, I get poisoned by it. Okay, if I take an entire bottle of whiskey,
and you fell over and bonked your head and cut yourself open and probably died from that.
Well, but I could actually die from acute alcohol poisoning,
right.
Too, all right? So the thing is this, what we don't know, because nobody's ever tested it, is giving 10 of these things at one time to a kid safe?
I'm going to, without knowing anything, I'm going to say no.
Well, you know what? We have school systems and governments that demand that you do it. And this is a serious issue. The fact that one thing is safe at one time does not mean that 10 of them at the same time is safe. And these are, and here's the real gotcha with all of this. We have allowed fraud as a business model, and we've not only allowed it, we've immunized it in the case of these shots. We have given the companies immunity. Even if they have data that they know it's unsound,
I'm no lawyer, but if it turns out there was fraud, I think you can get around just about any immunity, can't you?
Well, guess what? It turns out that
we'll never do Pfizer, it, but we could.
It turns out that Pfizer's own data had tens of thousands of adverse reactions to the COVID shots within a couple of weeks of them being rolled out. It was hidden. It had to be forced out by FOIA. Procedures and lawsuits.
It took years.
And by the way, they are supposedly not immune under the PREP Act for intentional misdirection and fraud. And
you, all right, okay, I want to shift to the marketer for a few. But let me ask you a question there. Since you don't have individual doctors giving shots anymore, which is so bizarre to me, doctors don't even act like doctors. That I'll pick a number. I'm going to say 85% of those shots were given at Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, you name it. How does, if all of a sudden I get a reaction, I'm going to go back to Walgreens and say, hey, what the bleep? Or something, or I'll make a complaint, not just a complaint, but at least I'll call and say, what do I do with this? They may say, go see your doctor, or they may say, just give it 24 hours, you're the 10th call we've got today like that or whatever. But how does Pfizer somehow put their finger on the statistics that Walgreens has? I could see that if they gave all the shots, and they just said, okay, if the guy calls, slam down on it real quick, and we'll make believe he didn't call. But there's all kinds of other people that are given these shots. How do they not know? And how does it get?
Chief, they did know.
Well, but I'm saying, why would if Walgreens gives 100 shots one day, and the next day 50 people call up and say, I now have two heads? How does Walgreens keep still? They're the ones that are giving them out.
Because they got paid.
That's unreal. I mean, I can't. But what's the liability on that versus how much they're paying you?
Zero, because we allowed that to happen. And here's it. But this goes. This is the same situation. Everybody's a pandemic.
Nobody wants me as a chairman of anything. I know. If that happened to me, I'm chairman of Walgreens. You couldn't pay me enough to hurt people,
Chief. The people within the economy, within the government payment systems, for 20 years, CMS has been issuing payments in the hundreds of billions of dollars a year, payments, not receipts, payments, that they knew were fraudulent.
Who's getting it all? I don't see all these rich people.
Well, guess what? A lot of it's going overseas.
Well, you mean the Social Security checks going to Ireland and all those kinds of places.
Uh-huh.
Well, hey, all right, so we're supposed to be not telling people how to trade, but at least pointing people sort of in the right direction. What is this? I'm totally stunned that the end of these two-day PPI and CPI, interest rates are down.
That made absolutely no sense to me either.
But they are. Now, does that mean that because Trump's been pounding the table on interest rates low, is the Fed going to start buying stuff in their balance sheet again?
No, I don't think so. I think that the reason you're seeing this, and I'm the only explanation that makes any sense to me, right? And the madness of crowds may end up being the actual answer. In other words, this may be a whole load of crap. is that there may be enough table pounding on the waste that if you look at, you take this number just out of CMS, and then you extrapolate this across the entire government payment system, which is not an unreasonable thing to do. And let's say that you find that $500 billion a year has been essentially printed and emitted into the economy as deficit spending, which of course is what causes inflation, right? It does
if the Fed cooperates. It doesn't if they don't.
Well, it does. No, because Treasury goes out and sells bonds, and so
if they sell them, and the Fed doesn't go out and buy them back, all they're doing
then rates are going to go up.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Right. So here's the thing, though. Hey. So if you look at this and you say that even on the lower end of the scale, the government's actual deficit, the actual operating deficit, ex the stealing, is 50% less than what we've been running for the last 20 years.
I don't think it's anywhere near that big. But
I do.
But I have a question for you regarding Social Security.
That would explain what you're seeing, Chief, in the numbers.
But if you ever, it also could be somebody's load of BS, too, but we all have had, people we know and people in the family that have essentially croaked, right?
Right.
If the minute somebody does, and you know, you cash in, what if you got some life insurance and you take them to the undertaker, I never had to cancel a Social Security check. They already knew.
Oh, Chief, they clawed back my mother's.
Okay, but what I'm saying, how is it because, overseas, because are you saying cost. That if... Are you saying that if somebody croaks in Ireland, that somehow it never gets back here and the check keeps going there for 30 years? I mean,
Chief, I'm saying that people have figured out how to exploit the fact that the system has zero checks and balances against fraudulent issuance, and it has been exploited to wild degree. And by the way, if you think that lawmakers aren't somehow getting kicked back on part of this, I'd take the under on that.
You know what? I'm not saying it doesn't happen, Carl, but watching how specific they are to everybody I know who's ever been on it with the constant, they know before you know that you turn 62. It seems to me, I thought they were always pretty damn efficient. The idea that they're sending out checks to half the people that don't belong, I'm not saying it can't happen a lot, but it seems odd to me. It just does.
Well,
at that level.
Is
somebody getting a check that doesn't deserve it? Of course. Is somebody been dead for 5 years and somehow you didn't notify them? Of course. But, I mean, the idea that, you know, half the checks are fraudulent or something, I just never even...
Not half, but 10%. But it's $2 trillion a year.
What do you mean? How is 10% of Social Security tax? What's the total?
I'm talking CMS. CMS totally. Which it includes, well, Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid. But Social Security is about a trillion in out.
How many people are on Social Security?
I'd have to look at the number.
Let's say it's 10 million and you're making...
Oh, it's way more than that.
Okay.
But you make
10 grand a year. Trillion's a lot of dough. Well, we're talking over how many years?
Total outflow is about a trillion.
Okay.
Per year. Okay.
But you're saying 10% of it's fraud?
I wouldn't be even slightly surprised.
All right. It's $100 billion. It's a lot of money, but boy, a month.
By the way, another $200 in CMS between Medicare and Medicaid.
And we gave what's his name? Musk, $9
billion. Well, but now we're at $300 billion a year.
You're not going to get an argument out of me to stop fraud. I mean,
here's the thing. But now, okay, so now $300 billion a year, that's, we're now getting up roughly close to somewhere between 15 and 20% of the operating deficit. Just in those two programs.
If we're pissing away $300 billion a year.
Just in those two programs.
Okay, but
how much should we piss away in defense?
Okay, but I guess what I'm saying is if we are pissing away $300 billion a year, I'm gonna take the under on sending half of that to a bunch of old people that don't exist. I mean, if people are stealing, they're stealing.
Well, you can go ahead and believe that it's not happening, but you tell me how a voucher gets put into the system to pay a Social Security payment to somebody that doesn't have a Social Security number.
That's what I'm saying. How is it? If being involved with the system, they're so all over people years
Chief,
before they even deserve it. I can't believe. I believe you,
Chief,
but it's...
Chief, the system. Listen, one of the things that showed up on X that Musk said that he was shocked by, which I had known for 20 years.
Which of course I discount everything the guy says. But go ahead.
Well, I understand, but again, that he was supposedly shocked by that I've known about for 20 years is that Social Security numbers in the system are not deduplicated.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I always thought it worked to their benefit. They end up
no,
getting
it works
more
the other way around. If you have a blank field, that's also not deduplicated.
What happened to all the money that got sent there that the guy never was able to file?
Oh no, they separate that out of your Social Security account because otherwise you'd get paid. You'd get credit for it.
No, I'm saying
you don't.
I'm saying the number that just the check shows up. There's no name attached to it. They just keep the check.
Chief, the problem with all of this stuff is that when you do not build those guards into the system the other direction, okay? In other words, you've got Jose down here at the corner that's using a stolen number, right? And Louie out in California is using the same stolen number, all right? Now, if there was any kind of accountability when you had all three of these things coming in at once, plus the guy, the mope, whose number it really is, right? If you had any kind of accountability, when those deposits, those 941s came in, INS would go out to all three of those places, and two of those guys would get deported in an afternoon. Because only one of them's valid.
And they'd, they'd send the money back. Hey, you know, this...
Well, and they would refuse to take the cash, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? When you build a system that allows the fraud to work one way, it can be exploited in the opposite direction.
Hey, you know, this consumer group, since Tesla has a big financing arm, that's actually their regulator that he's shutting down. I like that part.
Well, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, you want to talk about things that ought to be clawed back. I think we ought to claw back all... If you were part of the scams involved in this, including all the tax credit crap that must, as far as I'm concerned, Tesla should be destroyed, and all of the funds that he got personally as a consequence of that clawed back from him. If it ruins him, that's too damn bad. But I want to do it to everybody.
But it's never going to do that. It's never going to do that, Carl. You know, we got
well,
a dash.
You know what?
We get to talk on Tuesday. By the way, there's no show on Monday. Because there's no trading, but
well, Chief,
look at the.
Let me
say one last.
Law,
I'm with you.
One last thought. If you're beyond the law, if you've declared yourself beyond the law because you're doing this kind of stuff, then you can't be murdered.
Well,
think about that for a minute.
What did Wayne say about President Garfield got murdered because of a?
No, I said you man. Can't. No, you can't be murdered. You can be killed, but you can't be murdered because murder is a legal construct.
You probably read that Michael Madigan just got convicted.
Yep.
On half of the, none of the racketeering, got convicted on half the counts. Now, a guy like me, Carl, and I think you like talking to me, my Southside, you know, schoolboy mentality, I would say that if it was me and Commonwealth Edison bribed him and got stuff for it, meaning higher rates and all those kinds of things that I am now currently paying, that somehow... I think Commonwealth Edison paid some kind of fine, but not enough. How is it that if we can point to two or three specific rate increases, why doesn't Commonwealth Edison have to give that money back and lower the rate to where it was before? If this was an ill-gotten raise, how is all that okay?
Oh, it's not, and I wanted to claw it all back from everybody.
But then,
and
there's
if it
not
ruins
even
them, I don't care.
There's not even the other attorneys on the show, John Flanagan and Lou, tell me, what are you talking about? That's not going to happen. I guess I know it's not going to happen, but my question is, why not? I mean, anyway.
Well, I think it certainly can happen, and I think that the American people should insist that it does.
Well, I don't think the
American... And if people want to declare themselves exempt from the law, then that works both ways, and that's just too bad.
But American people are too busy fighting with each other to do anything. Well, by the way, don't forget Valentine's Day. Lob a few out there to people.
Yeah, you know. We've had a nice little time out doing a little skiing.
Well,
so
there you go.
Headed back towards the house.
And you didn't break any bones. That's good for you.
Everything's good.
SP Futures down one. By the way, is snow any good?
It really wasn't bad. Although, you know, by normal standards out there, it was terrible. But by standards for anywhere else other than there, it was good.
Well, SP Futures down one. NASDAQ Futures down five. So not much going on here today after kind of a wild week. Maybe we'll have a rest day. Again, there's no trading on Monday, so there's no Stocks and Jacks. So I'll see everybody on Tuesday.
That's all, folks.